What is going on, everybody? Welcome to the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast. I'm Vlad Sedler, and today we are getting very close to the Major League season, getting close to Vegas main events. Main events are up and running. We've got five so far as we record here on Friday, March the 13th. Lots of amazing stuff. And here with me, first I'll introduce my co-host, Jason Anthony. Booms. What's going on, bro?
Vlad, what up? I get to see you in Vegas next week, my man.
I can't wait. It's such a quick blur. I'm going to try to take in every single minute of it. I only have one draft there in the main event. So other than that, I'm just going to be socializing.
You are going to be the mayor, shaking babies and kissing hands, huh?
Yes, all of those, all the above. With us also today, since today's a closer relief pitcher episode, as we wrap up our tier series, is our closer and relief pitcher aficionado. You know him as Red Fox Roto. Dan, what's going on, man?
Hey, thanks for having me on the show. I've been meaning to get out a new bullpen report episode, been working through a PC issue, so I think I've got that figured out, but you invited me on before I could record something new, so we'll go with this.
All right. Yes. So this is the weekend before the Vegas main events, of course. WBC is in the air. Fun series going on. By the way, who's gotten hurt so far? I think there's one or two players in the WBC, if I'm not mistaken.
Been pretty quiet from what I've been watching. The main one was Kyle Teal, I think, is going to be for draft-wise.
Yeah, Teal is the one that hurt me. I had some shares. Already looking at replacements.
Man, Teal. Oh,
he's a target now, Dan. The draft cost is dropping.
If he gets far enough, yes. I still want to have him on some teams, but now it's all about cost.
Vlad. I was just going to say, it's kind of fascinating how a catcher getting hurt affects multiple different positions on the White Sox, not only Edgar Cuero, but all of a sudden Sosa is now relevant because of the DH opportunities are going to open up. So there's a lot of little dominoes to fall from one injury. So we got to pay really close attention to the rest of this before we get to Vegas.
Yeah, we had Dan do his beat, Red Fox Roto online championship, OC 12 teamer. Dan actually wanted to draft from the 12, and he absolutely crushed it. And this is one of those rare drafts where there was a malfunction in the beginning. It was Jazz Chisholm was taken second overall, and the person made a mistake, an error, but they didn't run it back. And so, yeah, I kind of threw off the draft off the top.
Sounds like a great pick.
And Kyle Teal and Hunter Green were not drafted, according to Dan.
Yeah, they went undrafted in that one. Teal was a little bit of a surprise. You know, 4 to 6 weeks. He could be back mid-April, late April. Probably worth a stash. Hard to roster three catchers, though. That's true.
Especially in a 12-teamer. It gets a little more challenging with those bench spots. 15-teamer is a little more doable. But, yeah, I love Teal. So it'll be interesting to see his draft costs, where it regulates, though.
Yeah, but Hunter Green going undrafted was interesting, but still being out until we expect July, that's a long time to hold anyone on a seven-man bench.
Yeah, and of course I drafted him in, round 20 of my beat Vlad League. It's like, let's just take a stab over here. I think I had Wheeler on that team as well. But if you do like to watch live stream drafts, for some people that is their choice of fantasy baseball entertainment and learning, you can watch a whole bunch of them here on the FTN Fantasy YouTube channel. You can also check them on my Twitter feed or FTN Fantasy's Twitter feed. But we did a beat Jason Anthony to kick things off. Then we did a beat Vlad, and had a beat Dan. Coming up on Sunday, the Beat Lucas Beery League. That'll be 6 p.m. Eastern on Sunday. There are spots available. Please sign up for that. Later in the week, we'll have Beat Joe Arrico, who, by the way, when I tune into that show, I'm like, okay, this dude is a professional, like I obviously know, but he was just rattling off stats like crazy. I was like, man, he's better at this than me. It was great.
That's a high bar to set to say that, Vlad. He's coming for your job.
Yeah, come do some live streams, man. No, it's great. Great, great, great host there. So you guys did wonderful. Kevin Hastings joined that as well. Great player, great analyst. And last thing I'll mention just on that front is, Saturday, you may already listen to the podcast at this point, but around 2:45 on Eastern, 5:45 Eastern on Saturday, March 14th, myself and Toby G, Batflip Crazy, we're going to be hosting the MTM Ultimate 5K entry draft that is happening live in New Jersey with Mike the Mouth and crew. Mike Mager, of course, is in there. David Einhorn's the defending champ. I think Mike Mager won 2 years ago. So Toby and I will be streaming that for 3+ hours. That'll also be on the YouTube. And man, I just need to get my catheter ready, I guess.
I heard a little birdie say that might be your birthday tomorrow too, right, Vlad?
That's right.
Happy birthday, my man.
Thank you. Thank you. I told my family, got this thing going on. It's an opportunity. Can't really pass up. I'm really honored to do it. It's a big draft, a big thing. And so, yeah, we'll do lunch before, dinner after. And, I've been burning the midnight oil with all the fantasy work. And honestly, I'm ready for the season.
Dan and I would sing to you, but we don't want to lose any listeners. So we'll just say happy birthday.
Thank you. Thank you. That in Russian tradition, they say don't celebrate before your birthday. That, and for some reason, they don't celebrate their 40th. So I don't know. I think a lot of men in Russia didn't make it to that back then.
Getting a little dark on us there.
Yeah, hey, Russian culture, very dark, very cold there. All right, yeah, let's talk some closers. Before we do that, just real quick, your guys' thoughts on early main event ADP. There are 5 drafts out. Of course, things get absolutely bonkers at different positions. But, Dan, just what do you think your overall macro view looking at the main event draft board? Surprised by anything?
Well, I only just tonight took a quick look at it. My main is not scheduled for another week, so I'm giving myself a little bit of a buffer to get back into 15-team mode after these OCs. But really, it looks kind of normal to me so far. See pitchers on the rise, which, of course, we expect every year. And the closers have risen along with them. We'll be getting into that, so I won't dive into it too much. But I haven't gotten too granular on where individual players or guys that I like are being taken. But you can definitely see where pitchers have ballooned up high and where some of the more popular sleepers have kind of risen to a cost where they're not really sleepers anymore. You can tell everyone knows and they're being drafted much earlier than ever before.
Yeah, it's good points, Dan. It's interesting. We do this every year, and I know, Vlad, you do some draft campaigns, and I do as well, and how tight the board gets come main event season. And those guys you were getting in round 23, 24 are now around 17, 18. And it just feels like after about round 22, there's just no good players left. It's always fascinating to me how that works. Pitchers are flying up. It's awesome we're doing this closer episode, because I was telling you guys offline that the closers even went up higher than the DCs, which really shocked me. But I think with the lack of quality closers this year, it's kind of get your guys and then kind of the draft, kind of sacrifice a pick to get a closer, and then you kind of figure it out from there. So I got my first main actually Sunday at 1 p.m., pick 6. So I'm pretty excited about that. You're muted, Vlad.
Yeah, I said I saw that main, and I was, because I'm looking at where I'm going to draft my second one, when and where, and I looked at that. I'm like, oh, well, I have a Beat Lucas draft we're doing, and I'm not going to be in a main event against my partner. My outlook on the main event, my first glance. So one thing I did was I did get an opportunity to write about it in detail over on Fangraphs. And so I kind of looked at the biggest risers in main event in relation to draft champions. And what I wrote about was specifically about pitchers and the late round pitchers, all the guys that have really surged up the board. And there's some crazy names, like the guys that are now that have had the biggest rise from that season are a lot of these pitchers that are going to be your fourth or fifth starters. Name some of them we know, recognize. Starters in the rotation are getting hurt, so these guys are now kind of stepping in. But it's like Grant Holmes, who had 5 innings with 9 strikeouts and no walks on Thursday. Just an absolute great outing, and that's going to bump them up big time. You got guys like 3 Cardinals all of a sudden in the mix. Like a week, 3 weeks ago, we were talking about, like, don't touch Cardinals starters. All of a sudden, you got Matthew Liberatore is going like 360. You got Dustin May cruising up the board. And the really crazy stuff is like Rhett Lauder okay, 316 ADP through five main events. Braxton Garrett at 306. Taj Bradley, I do not want to get into that business at 330. And then Nick Abel, I understand, top prospect and everything. I think I like Abel a little bit more than some of these other guys, but his ADP is 288. So things really change in this whole environment.
Yeah, I mean, a top 19-round pick for Nick Abel seems nuts. I mean, that would be a round 30 stab and an easy cut, but you see any spring training tick ups, a velocity, pitch mix, success, and you got to react to it. And main event drafters react more than most. But you got to get your guys right. You got to get guys that are going to break out. You got to pay the price, and they work. They work.
I mean, it's more, it's my theory is that it's not just some of these pitch mix changes or whatnot. For a lot of these pitchers, it's literally the box scores. Yeah, that's the correlation I'm seeing here. It's a lot of these guys have like a good strikeout to walk ratio, or like someone else got hurt. Like Quinn Priester is out with a wrist injury, and all of a sudden you got Kyle Harrison cruising up the board. That is until today on this Friday. He gave up 6 earned runs. So I think that might set him back, but that's the world we're living in right now. It's like, you know, a week from now, when we're drafting our main events, it's going to be a whole new board, really.
It's going to tighten up. It's just going to get tighter by the last main. There's no value had.
All right. So we're going to get some closers here before we do. Last thing, got to get in if you have not yet. We've got the absolute best team in the business, high stakes winners, overall champions, auction crushers, and we've got all the rankings, cheat sheets, over 17 cheat sheets. I guess over 17 would mean 18. Lots of cheat sheets, everything you need, always updated. Now, at this point, I'm updating everything every day. Great articles for everything, points, you name it. You know where to find us, fcnfantasy.com. Get in there, especially for the in-season stuff with the fab, drops, and all of our great content, including our in-season projections, daily and weekly projections. fcnfantasy.com. And it will be MLB26 as a promo code. I think the Judge promo code is still there. We might have a 15% flash sale coming up as well. All right, closers. Dan, why don't you, I'm kind of, you know, doing the Vlad thing, talking too much. Why don't you open us up with, you know, closers and get us situated?
Well, with closers, the one thing we need to concentrate on in draft season is just knowing when we want to take them. That's one of the most important parts, is kind of planning for that. The same can be said for catchers as well. Like in the NFBC, where you're drafting two catchers, you really need to have an idea of where you want to get them. Maybe decide on which tiers you want to draft from, and then kind of based on ADP, like around what rounds, you know, what sections of the draft you want to start targeting those positions specifically. Because those are two positions, closer and catcher, where a big run can leave you looking at just the dregs of the position and guys that you really are not comfortable drafting anymore. So it can feel awkward. It can feel bad when you're taking a closer, what you might consider a one category guy, instead of, you know, a four category hitter, a five category hitter, or maybe a, you know, a number two start or something like that. But when saves count in your league, it's something that just has to be done. So it's something you really do have to plan for. And, you know, looking through the tiers, like we're going to go through on the pod here today, that's a great way to identify what spots you want to make your closer selections from.
Yeah, and I'll mention that it's important for people to really understand your league and your draft format, right? Because we're talking mostly NFBC a lot here, where these are overall national competitions with large people, with a large amount of people in this. And so if you're not balancing your categories, you're not going to win your league or compete for the league prize. Different than a standalone league where relief pitchers, you know, the first off the board are going to go a little bit later, right? Mason Miller is not going to go pick 22 in a standard home league or in other types of leagues or formats, and definitely not in points. And then they'll go like maybe 40, 50, 60, whatever it is. But so we're kind of discussing this from the realm of NFBC. We'll talk about it from the 12 team standpoint as well, where we can, where of course, I think 12 teamers, they're going to go typically lower there as well. So somebody like a Raisel Iglesias, who might have like an 85 ADP in Maine, he'll be closer to like 120 in an OC.
Dan, before we jump into the first tier, I got a question for you when you're kind of looking through and creating your own tiers and rankings. How much do you use last year's data regarding team saves, team opportunities, percentage of saves divided through the bullpen last year? How much does that matter for you when you're projecting out the bullpens this year?
It really doesn't matter too much. One thing I do like to be aware of is just the managerial tendencies. Some managers like to spread it around. Some managers you really can't get much of a handle on, like Kevin Cash in Tampa. When Pete Fairbanks was healthy, he was the closer. No disputes. When Pete Fairbanks was not healthy, it was full-blown committee every time. Despite, very talented relievers in that bullpen, he never chose a successor to Fairbanks. So there are definitely managers who are loyal to their guys, and that can help you maybe elevate a closer on that team ahead of somebody who pitches for a manager who might want to spread it around, who might want to use his closer earlier if it seems like it's a more high leverage situation. So we will get into something very specific related to this topic right here at the top of tier one. So we'll give that a moment and I'll be addressing that.
Yeah. So one thing regarding the types of leagues, the one thing I kind of have on scale as far as like the value of a closer in a league, way I break it down is from a, like on a scale of 10 being the most important, with these gladiators where there are no benches and then draft champions and main events, they're all very important, right? So it's like gladiator, my ranking could be different than Dan's, for example. It's like an 8.5 out of 10 for the gladiators, an 8 for DCs, a 7.5 for main events, like a 7 in OCs, and then home leagues points, you're going down 6.5, 6. If you're playing best ball on Underdog or DraftKings, and I'm seeing people drafting Mason Miller or Edwin Diaz, it's crazy. You just don't do that. Do not draft any closers. You're not being sneaky in best ball. All right, so the tiers, here we go. There's a really big top tier. It's two guys that are going in the second round of 15 teamers. Jason, start off with you. Mason Miller and Edwin Diaz, do you have a preference? Are you targeting either guy in your drafts? Have you been drafting them?
Yeah, for me, I think Mason Miller's even in a tier above Edwin Diaz. We just watched him strike out the side in the closeout, the American win against Canada. The skills are just so elite. The strikeouts are elite. And one of my issues with drafting a closer here is the price. When you're drafting a Mason Miller, you're passing on, we'll just say, Kyle Schwarber. But I think the bigger price issue for me isn't Mason Miller and Edwin Diaz's price. It's the next tier of the Cade Smith and the Andres Munoz, Devin Williams, that they're going so close to Mason Miller and Edwin Diaz, because I think it's a pretty clear-cut tier break there, but they're being drafted like they're in the same tier. But for me, it's easily Mason Miller.
Well, this is where I might have to disagree a little bit. We're really splitting hairs with Mason Miller, Edwin Diaz, but the guy I have in that tier with them is Cade Smith, and I would actually rank Smith as my RP1 overall. And the differences are very slim, but this is my thinking. We've seen Dave Roberts and the Dodgers play matchups a little bit more with the back end of his bullpen. When Evan Phillips was there, he was the closer when he was healthy and was very good, but not all the time. When Tanner Scott signed the 4-year, $72 million deal, he was mostly the closer and still received a lot of opportunities, even when he wasn't pitching all that well, but he didn't get them all. You say, okay, this is Edwin Diaz. He's going to get every save chance now. I don't think we can automatically just assume that. A lot of their top bullpen options are left-handers. If they have a really difficult section of right-handed hitters coming up in the eighth inning, you could definitely see Edwin Diaz coming in for the eighth, leaving Tanner Scott, leaving Alex Vestia for the ninth, where maybe a lefty or two is coming up. Now, when we look at Mason Miller, Miller and Cade Smith are very similar, I think, statistically. Surprisingly so. People don't think Cade Smith has the sub three ERA, the sub one whip, you know, the 100 strikeouts per year, but he's done that the last 2 years. My concern with Miller is just the velo is so high. There's greater risk of injury. And then also Craig Stammen is a brand new manager, no experience. We have no idea how he's going to run his bullpen. We can assume Mason Miller is going to be reserved for the ninth, and that's probably what's going to happen. But right now, there's just that slight bit of uncertainty. It's enough that I'm going to go with Cade Smith, and I've done it in a draft. You know, I have taken Cade Smith as the first closer off the board in the second round of a 15-teamer. So I'm putting my money where my mouth is, and it's a really close decision, but I think Smith is above those two for me.
So since I'm a man of the community, and this is the month of all months, I joined in with the CBS, the Fantasy Baseball Today guys, and we did a live mock against some of their folks over there. So it was a 12-teamer. We did it live, pulled it off in an hour and a half. It was amazing. The chat was active. Obviously, you know, CBS has a big following. Somebody brought something interesting up that I hadn't even heard or known about it. And this might throw you for a loop, or you probably know, Dan, because you're the closer guy. But is it possible that because Cade Smith is under team control in 2029, and is going to be arbitration eligible after the season, could the Guardians go cheapo and maybe keep his value down by not giving him the Emmanuel Clase type of number, volume of opportunities? Ah, curveball, huh?
I don't think that they will end up doing that. We got a little bit of a preview of Cade Smith, the closer, at the end of last season, and he got almost all of the opportunities once he became the closer after Class A was, you know, put on the restricted list with the gambling probe. So I think he's just the full-time replacement. He is the new Emmanuel Class A. He's got a great chance to not only surpass 30 saves, but to approach 40, you know, those numbers that Class A was reaching every year.
I will share one minor concern that I have with Cade Smith, but I have him ranked up there, Dan, so I'm not necessarily disagreeing with you. I still think there's a tier break. One is the strikeout, the K's per nine. Mason Miller's at 15.18, where Cade Smith's at 12.71. That's a pretty significant difference. The other thing is Cade Smith's left on base percentage last year was at 65%. So if there's a little regression in that, you could see that ERA tick up into the low threes, mid threes. Great pitcher. Personally, I am adverse to relief pitchers coming off a previous year of a heavy usage, which I consider over 70 innings. And at 76 appearances and 73 2/3 innings, Cade Smith got ran last year. So I'll be very interested to see how he performs this year. Again, I'm, you know, picking at straws here. I'm not saying Cade Smith's going to struggle at all, but that's why I have him where I do.
Yeah, and that's a fair assessment as well. There are pros and cons to each guy, but the pro is Mason Miller, Edwin Diaz, Cade Smith, they are just elite relievers. So it's perfectly fine if you want to be, you know, in your draft, getting one of these top three just to secure one of the best in the position.
Yeah, we're right now in main events. It's a 22 ADP for Mason Miller, a 22.4 for Edwin Diaz, just a tick behind him. Then Cade Smith goes at 30, Yoan Duran at 31, Andres Munoz at 33. So it's kind of like your tier one, tier two. I like both guys. I have a feeling that if I'm in the middle of a second round, I'm probably going to take a big bat. It might depend what else I have. Then, of course, every time you push closer, it's always scary, right? My joke bad one is, as they usually are, is, you know, be careful. You might just end up with, you know, Clayton Beater and Victor Vodnik as your closer. So the one cool thing about I do like about Cade Smith is the way that the Guardians deployed Emmanuel Clase, and that it was just all the save ops. And so you kind of hope that that's what you're going to get again. So from the beginning of like 2023 until the time that Clase basically was booted, he earned 88.5% of his team's save opportunities. The closest to him was Josh Hader, 79%. So that's one stat I like. It will be interesting to see how kind of things play out. So I like him. Mason Miller, obviously an absolute beast. Edwin Diaz too. I think, I have a feeling David Roberts is going to, I keep going back and forth. We really don't know, but they haven't had like a real go-to guy since Evan Phillips when he was healthy, and David Roberts just kind of let him do it. And just one less thing he has to worry about. So I don't know. I'm always a little bit biased against the, you would think I'd be biased for the Dodgers, but outside of Roki, I feel like I like, I'm a little harder on most of these guys.
Yeah, it's always hard to be unbiased to your own team. And I think as fans, we are harder on our own team. Dan, jumping into the bottom of this tier one and two, with Johan Duran, Andrés Muñoz, Devin Williams, David Bednar, Aroldis Chapman, is there any fades that you have, or you think that they're a little mispriced, a little too high, or, you know, well, who's at the bottom of that tier, I guess, for you and why?
It is Aroldis Chapman, who is the last pitcher in this tier. And the reason is, where did the control come from last year? You know, like a 6.6% walk rate against a career rate over 12. I mean, how many 36, 37-year-old pitchers cut their walk rates in half? And can we expect that to continue? I don't think we can. Now, regression from the season he had last year, an ERA barely over one, a whip of 0.70. It was an all-time relief season. Regression from there can still look really, really good. But again, he's going to be, I think, 37 now, turning 38. And he's still dependent on high velocity. And at that age, if that velocity starts to dip, if he is back to a, you know, double-digit walk rate, things can go south. So I have not clicked on Chapman's name yet.
Funny enough, you were all about it last year. Like, you landed him right in like some big event, and either the main was it or somewhere.
He was on my main and my DC in my two of my three CLQs. Yeah.
Yeah. We should have like a closer battle, I feel like, or maybe we should just like do it at the end of this, like just do like a quick like draft or a pool or something, because remember last year, like, you proved your closer worthiness, or I was like, you know, I prefer Liam Hendricks. You're like, I like Chapman. And guess what?
I was around pick 250 in my DC CLQ. And I asked you, like, you have a feel on Hendricks or Chapman. And you eventually said you were leaning toward Hendricks. And I pretty much told you, yeah, I'm taking Chapman anyway.
Fade the gut, baby.
And then Hendricks was taken a pick ahead of me. And then I took Chapman. And thankfully, I got that one right.
Well, Vlad, that might be fun, since there's about eight bullpens that are unsettled that we can play that game, because I'm sure the listeners would love to hear Dan's opinion on him if he nailed that one so good, as he, you know, nailing a lot of the bullpen. So I would hate to go against him more than once on this episode.
Yeah, I mean, with me, for Chapman, it's just that ridiculous reduction in walk rate that you're always kind of like, where did that come from? It was 6.5% last year, where usually he's double that for you know, pretty much most of the last two-thirds of his career. So holding opposing batters to a 131 average, just some insane stuff. And obviously in this offseason, he looks like a beast. The Red Sox look good, and I'm sure he'll probably be fine. David Bednar looked fantastic here in this setting up for Mason Miller for the USA win, which is pretty cool. I think he'll be just fine. I'm a big fan of Bednar. The guy I really like, and I just hope it's not 2 years in a row of getting crushed by it. But Devin Williams is somebody I like. I think I had him listed in a bold predictions article as going to lead the majors in saves. But for me last year, it was just it felt like a bumpier ride than it actually was. But because you're looking at a 4.79 ERA, and you know, this is a guy that had a, you know, XERA, FIP, XFIP, everything was under 3. He had like a 55% strand rate. You know, just so much going on that was bad for him. And he did, it did end up settling down. But basically his career strikeout rate's like over 38%. You know, from his three healthy seasons, he had like a sub-2 ERA. So I hope he can find himself. And he joins the group of all these former Yankees who are now Yankee haters, like Sonny Gray and I forget some other guys.
It's really hard to find a fade in this group because they're all so good. I mean, you talk about Aroldis Chapman, he had a 30% ball rate. I mean, that's what led to that 6% walk rate Dan was alluding to. Dan, when you're looking at bullpens, does the player behind, we'll call him the setup guy pushing the closer, does it matter to you how skilled that guy is when you're targeting a certain bullpen arm? I mean, obviously you have the elite guys that aren't in risk of losing their job. But if you like Raisel Iglesias, is that worrying you that Robert Suarez is there? Or would you pick a bullpen that there's not a lot of competition behind it with a guy with lesser skills?
Well, this came up in the Beat Red Fox Roto OC last night. I ended up taking Ryan Walker as my closer too. And one of the reasons I felt fairly secure about Walker is because there's just nobody behind him right now that I think is really competing for that closer role. Joel Piguero maybe had a chance to, but he's now dealing with a hamstring strain, probably going to miss the start of the year. Other guys in the pen, just they don't really offer any competition to Walker. And Walker had a back injury kind of early last year. I think it really just set off this series of events where he could have been overcompensating for it, changed his mechanics, got thrown off. Says he fixed it over the offseason. We'll see. Spring results, really early. He looks pretty good. But that's one reason I like Ryan Walker over somebody like Raisel Iglesias, because of the presence of Robert Suarez, you know, the major league leader in saves over the last 2 years combined. It's Suarez with 76. And he signed for 3 years in Atlanta. So they are committed to Suarez for the future. We already saw Raisel Iglesias lose the closer role for about a month last year. And really the only reason he probably got that job back is because the Braves as a team did not produce a save opportunity for about a full month. During that time, Dylan Lee was operating as their primary ninth inning option. And I think if Lee had been able to gather 3, 4, 5 saves during that time, Iglesias might not have gotten that job back. He might not have ended up re-signing there this year. Now, they have a new manager, Walt Weiss. You know, it was Brian Snitker that removed Iglesias from the role last year. So maybe he does get a little additional leash from Weiss, who might not want to disrupt that order that seems to be there right now, where it's Iglesias is going to close for this year, and then we'll move on to Suarez the next 2 years. But definitely having such a talented and experienced reliever behind Iglesias is a reason for me not to be that excited about him.
Well, let's start off that game we were going to play, Vlad. Robert Suarez or Raisel Iglesias this year? Who has more saves? Dan, you first.
I still think it'll end up being Iglesias. There's nothing wrong with him as a pitcher. He's still very good. And starting with the job obviously gives him a nice head start.
I mean, Iglesias for me. Definitely have some little bias there because, you know, he's making $16 million this year and Suarez is making $15 million. So therefore, no. I think they're in a very good position. The one thing I'll mention about Suarez is, you said most of the things and how elite he's been. His ADP in main event is crazy. Like when I switched over my BDP rankings from DC to main event, I already had Suarez like minus 40. So that's what, two, you know, through almost three rounds and below his ADP in DCs. He dropped, I mean, it went like crazy. So basically what I'm trying to say without making sense is that he is highly coveted by main event drafters. It has meaning that if you were to pick a direction that people are going, it's they like Suarez and think he will take that job. So maybe I'm trying to wrap it up into a bow too simply, but to me, it just seems main event managers like prefer Robert Suarez.
I think with that narrative, Vlad, I think it's when or if Suarez gets the job, he's not going to give it back. That's not saying Iglesias cannot keep the job all year because he has good skills. But we don't know how Robert Suarez is not as the closer. There's a lot of these closers that are terrible in the eighth inning. And we don't know. I mean, we've had basically one statement that I've read from Walt Weiss that Iglesias is the closer. Dan, you're much more in tune to that. And I know it's been said he started in a year, but if I had to put money, I would probably try to get some odds and get Suarez, but I am avoiding that bullpen just because of the cost of Suarez at the back end.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. And it's true. I mean, like I've just kind of tried to not be stubborn, and I've dialed back on Iglesias, usually just let him pass just for the reason of where I realize I'm almost trying to convince myself to be right. But I also have to kind of prognosticate properly. It's very easy for Suarez to be able to take it. So some of the concerns people have are, I think, for sure a real deal. But I mean, Iglesias, the great thing about him, he doesn't walk people, keeps the ratios low, gets the job done. But listen, both of these guys do it. I think they're both really, really solid. Dan, what about Ryan Helsley? And have you watched him at all this spring? Seen his numbers, or I think there's some news, right, from new manager Craig Abernas about how he's going to deploy him.
Yeah, it was mostly good news. You can see a little bit of a negative in it, but Abernas says he's going to try to reserve Helsley strictly for save opportunities. That never actually works in practice because the Braves last year had a month no saves. If the Orioles don't give him a save opportunity for a week or something, yeah, he's going to get his work in a non-save situation. But that knowledge, that comfort, that routine of when we have the lead late, that's when I start getting warmed up. That's when I start getting ready. I'm coming into that game. That can help pitchers to just stay in a good frame of mind. And just be ready to handle only that ninth inning. They have that certainty. It just helps build the confidence. So it gives a likelier chance that Helsley will get to 30 saves, will have better ratios, because he's not going to be seeing overuse. But that's the downside. If he's not throwing 65, 70 innings and he's getting maybe 50, 55 innings, kind of like Kenley Jansen has been used in some previous seasons, he's not going to get the massive strikeout total. And, there's just going to be maybe fewer weeks where he contributes to your team at all.
It's it kind of shows exactly what I was just referring to with Helsley last year when he got moved out of the ninth, when he got traded to the Mets, he was a dumpster fire. But I agree with Dan 100%. When you're limited to those 50, even if there's 50, 55 innings, even with a 10.13 Ks per nine, it's not going to be an asset for your team. You really need that 90, 100 strikeout guy to really tweak those differences in the ratios and things like that. One other guy I wanted to point out in this tier was Jeff Hoffman, how he's kind of solidified as the next in that group. I've been watching his ADP roller coaster in the DC season, how he was high up and then just started free falling when Toronto tried to sign Iglesias, and then kept going down. There was talk about someone else, and now they were worried about skills. And now all of a sudden he is, closer, 10 off the board roughly at ADP 78 in the main event. And he was going around pick 120 for a while. So that's kind of fascinating how he's kind of all of a sudden solidified as head of Palencia, Fairbanks, Jansen, and that group. Where are you at on Mr. Hoffman, Dan?
I like him a lot. He's probably my most drafted closer so far this year. He survived free agency. He's going to be back in the ninth inning. And, we look at last year and say, well, Jeff Hoffman was terrible. He had 33 saves. He was fourth in the majors in saves last year. He had 9 wins. I mean, he had more wins than starting pitchers. He still struck out over 80 batters. The whip was tolerable for a reliever at 1.19. The home runs he allowed really just hurt the ERA. And for a relief pitcher, that's not you want to get like a 2.5 ERA. You want an elite ratio guy as your closer. But if you're not going to get that, 33 saves and 9 wins is still very valuable for fantasy. Now, looking ahead, he's already said he plans to use his very effective slider more often and kind of reduce the usage of the fastballs. I really think last year he just had some trouble living up to, you know, this big contract, the largest contract he's ever signed. Maybe he was putting some pressure on himself, and he's got an idea now of how he wants to make some improvements and throw some pitches that are just, that work better for him. There's really not a lot of competition for him there in Toronto. So I really like him. I think he'll have a much better season, look much more like he had with the Phillies the prior two seasons.
Yeah, Hoffman, so exactly. Yimi Garcia is not going to be ready to start the season, which actually brings up a good point. And when I was working through the new rankings with the main events, I'm starting to look at who you might be able to stream if you need somebody there on the weekend for that first weekend, because in NFBC, the season starts on a Thursday. The cheat game is there on a Wednesday. And there are only a few teams that have four games that week. And I'm guessing at some point people will start chasing all these guys, but the Toronto Blue Jays and the Cleveland Guardians both have four games that week. So I added Louis Varland and Sean Armstrong, maybe even Hunter Gaddis, as guys that you could potentially use, especially if you have, if you have like Wheeler, Garrett Cole, or Rodon, and then you get someone injured, like you want to be able to field as many players as you can for that half week, or for that week and a half, if you want to count it as one period. So just some interesting guys that I'm throwing out there. Sorry, Jay, you were going to say something.
Yeah. Just the last thing on Hoffman was everybody remembers the home run he gave up to basically lose the World Series. He was dominant in the playoffs. He was not bad at all. And everybody kind of has this lasting memory of him struggling in the playoffs. So, I think it's an opportunity and kind of a misprice. I think 78 is hard to call it a misprice, but I like him a lot too.
Yeah, he's to me is one of the best closers. I think he's one of the best like just relief pitchers in general in baseball. So in the 2 years after he got out of Colorado and he was on Philly as a setup man, I mean, he was rocking a 34% strikeout rate, a sub-1 whip, a 2.25 ERA. Of course, that's in the past, and last season it was a 1.99 home run per nine. But I like him, and like you said, Dan, it's very important not having much competition there. I did want to mention about a little bit of differences that I'm seeing and how much things are separating a little bit, especially between 15s and 12s. But for example, like Daniel Palencia, his ADP now in main events is 82. So it's like, he's even ahead of Iglesias. He's 82. Iglesias is 84. Hoffman's 78, just a little bit above them. And then Fairbanks is 91. If you switch over to like the 12 team OCs, you know, obviously all these guys are pushed up. But in this scenario, Palencia is the top guy of those guys. He's 99 ADP. Hoffman's 103. And Iglesias is 105. And by the way, a big difference between Fairbanks, where in the 15 teamers, Pete Fairbanks has a 91 ADP. In the 12 teamers, it's around 120.
Interesting. That's just shows once you get the bigger money on the line, those guys are going to fly up, because if you don't have them, you can't really win the overall. And that's what most people are playing for. Got the game. Two more bullpens want to throw out there. I'm not going to throw Houston out there because Hader's injury is, you know, nobody really knows what's going on with the biceps. But we have Tampa Bay's bullpen and we have Kansas City's bullpen. Tampa Bay, Griffin Jacks is kind of the closer going, as the locked in guy. Griffin Jacks had zero saves last year, which is pretty interesting to me because he pitched for Tampa Bay for about 2 months. And like Dan alluded to, when Fairbanks was gone, it was complete bullpen by committee. So I don't really understand the price there. And then Carlos Estevez, we have Lucas Erceg and Matt Strom there. And we have Carlos Estevez throwing batting practice right now at 88 miles an hour. Are we overreacting to that? I know he's falling in drafts, but he's still going, you know, in the top 110 picks. So, Dan, if you want to start on Tampa Bay and then over to you, Vlad, and then we'll circle back to Kansas City.
Well, Tampa Bay, unsurprisingly, Kevin Cash said during the offseason he planned to use a committee approach. Without Pete Fairbanks there, back to the committee. The pitchers that were mentioned were the obvious ones, Griffin Jacks, Edwin Uceta, and then Garrett Clevenger as the left-handed option of that trio. So now with Useita, you know, dealing with the shoulder issue, and we don't really know how ready he'll be at the start of the season. It definitely gives Griffin Jacks the opportunity to just become that 1A, that go-to of the right-handed choices. And then with Garrett Clevenger, because he will be used earlier than the ninth inning, he'll be used in the eighth, used in the seventh when a left-handed batter or portion of the lineup comes up. You know, Jacks could get that 60%, 70% share. And then when Useita does rejoin the team and he's ready to start pitching, you know, if Jacks has earned that trust of Kevin Cash, there's a possibility that he becomes the new Pete Fairbanks, where Cash says, okay, I like this guy in the ninth, I'm just going to leave him there, and I'll work in Useita and Clevenger and all these other guys in my bullpen, but I want to have Jacks in the ninth. There's a non-zero chance of that happening. So I like Jacks as a pick for the upside, but I still don't want to take him because the price has gotten so high. You know, where he's going now in a range where there are guys who are their team's sole closer, who I like and I believe in. So I have not taken any Jacks, but there could be really big upside there.
My thing about him is he's one of the few guys that I've gone 180 on, because in November, December, most of January, not only was I not drafting him, I had him 50, 70 picks below his ADP, and I couldn't believe why people were drafting him there. And started reading a little bit more, paying a little more attention, and I just started like thinking about of what happened with Fairbanks and how he kind of took a hold of the job. Think about how elite and amazing Griffin Jacks is, and the fact that because he's in Tampa and because he had a little bit of some struggles last year, he's not and not named the guy. It still feels like kind of a good price, and the bullpen around it is just, to me, seems like it's kind of falling apart. When Kevin Cash first mentioned something about his closers in maybe January, he hadn't even mentioned Useita. Maybe he just missed it when he was speaking, because obviously Useita is going to be in the mix. But he mentioned Manuel Rodriguez, Griffin Jacks, and Garrett Clevenger. And Manuel Rodriguez, you know, he's not back from his elbow surgery. Edwin Useita is dealing with shoulder inflammation. So they don't have, to me, looks like many options. You got your main guy, you know, righty in Jacks. You got Garrett Clevenger. And if you look at roster resource, they mixed in Brian Baker. He's kind of now the third guy in there. So I'm just kind of betting on the skills. And so I do like Jacks.
I was just going to say Brian Baker's name because of Useita's injury. And we truly have no idea. These three in Edwin Useita, Griffin Jacks, and Garrett Clevenger had a combined 3 saves last year. It's not like there's any experience to lean on, and obviously Brian Baker doesn't have any either. So someone's going to get, you know, 20 plus saves maybe, or the field, you know, where they're going to have 8 across the board. We don't know with Kevin Cash, so it's interesting. But if I had to place a bet, I would probably take the field over Griffin Jacks if you gave it to me.
Well, I hate fading you, buddy, because many times we've gone through this exercise and I end up getting proved wrong because I'm stubborn on something. So I'm gonna stay open minded on it, not try to push him too much. Other guys in this tier, just want to touch on. You mentioned Carlos Estevez. It kind of feels like what's happening in the preseason with him is like almost what is that called? Like a self fulfilling prophecy, not self fulfilling, but like a confirmation bias, right? Because he's a big fade for a lot of people looking at last year's numbers, and it's like, Carlos Estevez, how can this be happening? Like, what the hell? And then all of a sudden he's having a rough spring, and now you see him drop considerably, and people are drafting up Lucas Urseg, who obviously we all love, and Matt Strom like hotcakes. So that's a very, you know, interesting situation. So let's touch on that, Dan, Jason, if you can, and then just throw in any thoughts you have on the other guys in this range, just to kind of wrap it up with Daniel Palencia, Pete Fairbanks, and then let's throw Kenley Jansen and Josh Hader and Emilio Pagan in there as well.
Okay, well, starting with Carlos Estevez, I'm very concerned. It's not bad that his first outing he came in at 88, 89 miles per hour. It's bad that he was back at that same velocity his next appearance. And that's about, 6-7 miles per hour off his average from last year, was around 95.
six, seven.
Yeah, this is not a tick or two below. This is a significant difference. Oh, six, seven. Come on,
Vlad. You got it. I got you. Jason just gave it a.
Anyway, Estevez has vastly outperformed his peripherals for 2 years running now. And, the Royals are bringing in those outfield fences 10 feet in all around. I think they're lowering the fences as well. And Estevez is a fly ball pitcher. So there's just there's red flags popping up all over in his profile. And I don't really want any part of him if I can avoid it.
Can I interject just 1 second on that? Props to you on the correct pronunciation, because unlike a very Americanized Coach Gordon Bombay, who goes by Emilio Estevez, you're right. It's Carlos Estevez. So my bad.
Well, I probably Americanized it then too, Vlad. Sorry.
I keep a list of your Americanizations.
Yes. America. Well,
keeping us on topic here. A few other guys from this tier, Daniel Palencia. I want to like him a lot. I'm a Cubs fan from Chicago. He survived free agency as well. They didn't really bring in anyone to compete with him. Phil Maton, Hunter Harvey, great skills from Harvey's, never stayed healthy. So Palencia has that job. I think he's a much better pitcher than Porter Hodge was the year before, where a lot of people expected, oh, Hodge is just going to be the closer there. But Palencia, the last two seasons, has dealt with a shoulder issue late. He had it last season as well. And he's unproven. We've had 4 months of Daniel Palencia as a successful closer. We've had over 10 years of Kenley Jansen as one of the best we've ever seen. So Jansen, Palencia, I actually have them on fairly equal footing, where Palencia is being drafted far, far earlier than Jansen is. And then Pete Fairbanks is right in there as well in this tier. I like Fairbanks as a pitcher, but he also has had a kind of a checkered injury history. And then fairly recently, the Marlins manager, Clayton McCullough, said he would be open to using Fairbanks outside of the ninth inning, using him earlier if necessary. So I think that kind of reduces the odds that Fairbanks can be a 30, 35 save guy, and maybe he ends up in the high 20s. And when you're competing for overalls, or you're depending on Fairbanks as your RP1 in some cases, you need a guy that has a chance to get you 35 to 40 saves. I don't think Fairbanks has that ceiling right now.
Good points. For me, circling back to Estevez, is that better, Vlad?
A little.
I'm working on it. Give me some grace. We talked about red flags. My sheet's conditional formatted here from last year's stats, and you want to talk about red flags. Three quarters of his sheet is red. 8% swinging strike rate, 24% CSW, 25% ground ball rate, as Dan alluded to, extreme fly ball pitcher. Sierra at 4.43, XFIP at 4.95, K minus walk at 11.9%. Ks per nine, 7.36. Last year was 95.9. So if he doesn't get that velocity back, you can imagine what those numbers are going to do. With that being said, Lucas Erceg last year's Ks per nine was 7.04. His skills fell off a cliff too. And I know he had a shoulder injury, but his K minus walk was only 12. Swinging strike was only 11.1. So it's not like he has a guy behind him beating down the door. We all love Matt Strom, but I don't believe that Casey's going to throw a lefty in the full-time closer role. So that one's going to be really interesting where it falls. I think they're going to give Estevez a shot to start the year and then let him lose it. So just some notes behind that. As far as other guys in this tier, I really do like Daniel Palencia, especially with Craig Counsell coming out and saying he's the closer. Really like Phil Maton's skills behind him, but he hasn't been really a closer at five saves last year. The shoulder issue does scare me a little bit. I'm kind of a never Pete Fairbanks guy just because the past injury history, going to a bad team, And then, as Dan alluded to, which I just learned about 3 minutes ago, he's going to be used outside the ninth inning, so that just knocked him even lower. I will take Kenley Jansen if I get stuck and not a target, just with Will Vest and Kyle Finnegan there, and A.J. Hinch's propensity to play with that bullpen a little bit. And I think Emilio Pagan, actually, I have over a couple of those guys just due to the manager's tendency and Terry Francona. He likes the dude, and Pagan was pretty good last year. Again, the extreme fly ball pitcher in Great American Ballpark is scary, but he was really good last year. It was not fluky per se. So I think Pagan would be higher than Kinley Fairbanks for me, but below Palencia.
I think Calvin Fauché is a little sneaky, not necessarily in the main, maybe as a late round pick, because I could see that working out. He obviously throws heat, and he had some rough stretches for sure last year. He kind of feels like the guy there. Anthony Bender's never really been able to come through. They got the Nard Dog back, but he's a lefty, middle of the bullpen. Tyler Phillips has stepped up. So, yeah, that's not a bad thing. One thing I'll push back on, I think the Marlins are kind of spunky. They have an excellent starting pitching staff and just a bunch of young guys, and they're all fast and they run, and it's a nice core. Like, it's not like, you know, they're not a bunch of world beaters, and obviously we like a lot of them for fantasy, but I don't know. I kind of think the Marlins are, we saw them have a nice little run, so I thought they were doing pretty good.
I'm going to add spunk right next to my knucklehead category, so they'll be able to equal each other out.
To wrap it up from a perspective of us, where we are, consensus, I think it's fair to say we recommend just don't draft Carlos Estevez, right? Yeah.
Yes. Okay.
All right, we're going to run through this now a little quicker because we're getting here towards the end of at least guys that close, who we know are for sure closers. We'll go through two sort of bigger tiers and just point out anyone that we like, don't like here. But this is the tier of some probably closers, maybe on not some good teams, and then question marks or temporary guys. Got Ryan Walker of the Giants that Dan talked about, Dennis Santana of Pittsburgh. The Milwaukee guys, Trevor Megill and Abner Uribe. Do we have a side, or do we just avoid Brian Abreu, who should be the temporary closer? He got blown up, by the way, in a spring start today. Sir Anthony Dominguez. Of course, we talked about Robert Suarez. There's Robert Garcia of the Rangers, Riley O'Brien, and Kirby Yates. Dan, start us off with this tier. Give us the high level.
Well, I do like Ryan Walker. We already alluded to that earlier in the episode, so I'm not going to dig too much deeper on it, but I think he is healthier. I think he does have the mechanics down a little better this year. He probably will never be as good as he was in 2024 again, but he could be a very viable closer with very little competition in San Francisco. Dennis Santana, the skills don't flash. They're really mediocre. So kind of like Carlos Estevez, he has outperformed those underlying metrics for all of his time with Pittsburgh, but he is their closer. So in tiers like this, we draft the role, not the skills. You want the guy who's going to start with the job. You know, you don't want to draft someone like Trevor Megill, Abner Uribe. One of those two is probably not going to be the closer. Having them on your team doesn't really help you right now. Take a Ryan Walker, take a Dennis Santana, if they're going to be your second closer. And then if the price falls on a Megill or Uribe, take a shot on them later. You could have a nice half closer, or, you know, the upside could be pretty high if one of them does secure the job. Brian Abreu, 3 straight seasons of 100 plus strikeouts. We don't know what's happening with Josh Hader's bicep. When he'll be available, if he can stay healthy, even when he does come back. So Abreu, I think, is a nice pickup. Again, he's got the role to start the season. That's the kind of guy you want to draft, not the guy who might get the role later, like a Robert Suarez. Sir Anthony Dominguez has fallen way too far in most of the drafts I've been in for a guy who Will Venable, who last year did not commit to any of his relievers for any more than like a week at a time, has already said Sir Anthony is going to be the closer. The White Sox are paying him like a closer, 2 years, $20 million. So Dominguez should not be. He went 253rd in my OC last night.
Good. Okay.
I mean, that was incredible that he fell that far. I've taken him as my second closer a number of times, and I feel comfortable doing it. Bad walk rate, that could always come back and bite him. But there's not a whole lot behind him that's a serious threat, unless the White Sox really want to commit to Grant Taylor as a closer, which that's not the plan right now.
Quick, Jason, I know you hate the sidetracks. I got to just tell you, my TGFBI pitching staff, just listen to this, okay?
No, don't do it.
Huh? You got to hear it. It's a 15-teamer.
Nope, I'm muting you. Can I mute you? I'm not running the room.
No, there's a point to it. Listen to this. My closers are Ryan Helsley, Pete Fairbanks, and Kirby Yates. Check out these starters. This is most likely is going to flame out, but if it's not, it's winning something. And I'm not going to do this in the main, I swear. And some of these guys got hurt in the last week while I was drafting. Brian Wu, Jesus Luzardo, Spencer Strider, Blake Snell, Joe Musgrove, Carlos Rodon, Ryan Weathers, and Roki Sasaki.
You got Roki first share, right?
I wasn't going to draft him, but yeah.
Right, that's anyways. Pretty fire, Vlad. I don't know why you wouldn't do it in the main if you want to win the overall. You know, throw your balls out there. You know, give it a shot.
Super, super dicey. for me, I like your point about Ryan Walker. Like, we've been talking about this since November, Dan. Like, you know, who's coming there, take the job? I think I saw Keaton Wynn just like throw an absolute heat. I don't know how they're gonna stretch him out or what they're doing with him, but he could be a potential guy. There's really no one there. Dennis Santana's got some good arms behind him. I love both McGill and Uribe as pitchers. I'm kind of staying away from that situation personally. Not a big Dominguez guy, mostly because of the walk rate, and just probably going to end up being wrong on that. My reverse AJ Puck of this year. Robert Suarez, we talked about. Robert Garcia, I do like. I know Chris Martin is there. He just doesn't have many save opportunities over the course of his career. He's almost 40. He's had thoracic outlet. He's just got a lot going on. And, you know, and then just to end it here with Riley O'Brien, this is something Dan and I talked about in the chat months ago, where I read some stuff about O'Brien with numbers. I'm like, dude, boy, this guy is insane. And then you pointed out some things to counter that, and you brought Matt Swanson into my life, and apparently into everyone's life, because people love Matt Swanson in main event drafts.
Well, I knew we'd end up talking about Riley O'Brien. So I wrote a few things down here. He broke out at age 30 last year. And his breakout season, what we're calling a breakout, was a 22.5% K rate, 11% K minus walk, double digit walk rate, 252 BABIP, luckily low, over 80% strand rate, luckily high. That was a breakout season, and we're still looking at him thinking he needs to get better than that. He's coming off a calf injury now in the spring. He's made just two appearances. He's walked five batters in 1 2/3 in those two appearances. He might not be ready to handle a closer role right at the start of the season. And you've got Matt Swanson there. You've got Jojo Romero from the left side, who did save, I think, 8 games for the Cardinals last year. There are guys who can pitch in that ninth or have those late inning opportunities besides Riley O'Brien. I don't see a skilled pitcher, and I don't see a pitcher that's likely to have the job to himself or to keep it very long if he is in that mix. So I don't like Riley O'Brien. That's all I can say about it.
I mean, Dan, he got 5 outs by walking 5 guys. I don't see the issue there.
Yeah, when your walks and outs match, that's not a good thing.
I love Matt Swanson. He, you know, 2 years ago, he was a big closer in their minor league system. I do have some concerns with how they used him in a multi-inning relief role last year. Do you have any concerns about that? Because if you look at skills, he easily, you know, should be the guy. But we all know Ollie Marmol, and you know, he has not been the easiest manager for us to figure out, not just bullpen, but lineup wise. So is that any concerns there with Swanson's usage last year?
Not necessarily the usage. My concern is that he had a 29% K rate, which we would typically look at and say, you know, wow, that's really good. That's elite closer level K rate. It was on a 9.3% swinging strike rate. Those two numbers, they do not align. So something's got to give. He does not have a minor league history of high swinging strike rate. So I think that that strikeout rate is coming down. The question is, how far down does it come? And is it still high enough that he can remain an effective pitcher? Because he was even luckier in BABIP last year. It was 216. But where Swanson has an advantage, I think, over O'Brien is that he just starts from a better base. He's 27 years old. You know, he's a younger pitcher, and he just has a better history of control. He doesn't walk as many guys. And typically when you're looking at the ninth inning, you don't want somebody walking a lot of hitters unless they have that 30% plus strikeout rate. And Riley O'Brien is not even close to that.
Interesting.
Kirby Yates is looks like he's going to stand out over there. I'm starting to buy in more on him.
He's our age, by the way, Vlad.
I'm older, but yeah, Kirby. He's old. He's getting up there in age, and obviously, I think Dan, you mentioned something before the show about a Robert Stevenson setback. Ben Joyce isn't quite ready. Drew Pomeranz, the lefty there. King of side notes back here. I was just looking at spring stats. We already know how bad the Angels pitchers are. So I know it's just a small sample of just, you know, 5 to 10 innings. So every one of their starters has at least a 7 ERA. Jose Soriano, Reed Detmers, Konowitz, Alek Manoah, Grayson Rodriguez, every single one of them, everyone except for the kid, George Claussen. He's been cruising, but just that's it. King of side notes, over and out.
But did they get their air conditioning fix for Yusei Kikuchi? That is the question, because breakout superstar if air conditioning's there, Yusei Kikuchi 2026.
Probably not.
But I'd like to kind of wrap up this tier or episode, if you'd like, with the Texas bullpen, the Robert Garcia versus Chris Martin conversation with Dan. I know he drafted Robert Garcia in the Beat Jason Anthony League. So I know his answer, but I'd like to kind of hear his thoughts behind it, other than the fact Chris Martin's 39 and never really had more than 2 saves in a year.
There's your answer. No, Chris Martin has been actually diagnosed with thoracic outlet syndrome. He's 39 years old. He looked to be, you know, a favorite to start with a closer role last year, did not get it. He was already passed over last year. Robert Garcia tied for the league or the team lead in saves last year. It was pretty terrible number 9, you know, with Luke Jackson and Sean Armstrong, who are both gone. So when there's two players being talked about as potential closing candidates for the team by the manager, and one of them is 40 years old and has thoracic outlet syndrome, you know, major shoulder issue, I'm going to go with the guy who is the last remaining of the three that led the team in saves last year. I'm going to go for Robert Garcia.
Same page. And Alexis Diaz got released, so he went up one spot in my ADP rankings.
That was never going to happen.
All right, get here to the home stretch. Most of these are relievers. Towards the back end, we touched on Swanson, Clevenger, JoJo Romero, Matt Strom. Grant Taylor is an interesting guy. Obviously, it seems like the most skilled, kind of the next Griffin Jacks, if you will, in this tier. An absolute
love
stud.
Taylor.
But yeah, let's end here with Jason. You want to play a little? Have me and Dan have a little competition. I'll write these down and we'll track them at the end of the year and see who wins.
Let's do it. All right, guys. We'll start off Arizona's bullpen: Kevin Ginkle versus Paul Sewald.
For most saves.
Most saves.
All right, Dan, go first.
I'm taking Paul Sewald. It's just the experience level. Ginkle's been talked about as a possible closer there for years, and it's never happened. I don't think it's going to again.
I would love to go with the lefty, Ryan Thompson, and he's looked good and healthy. I think he's solid, but I'm going to go with my old friend, hashtag old friend, Kevin Ginkle.
And why is the right answer AJ Puck?
Yeah,
it is. Right. It is Puck. They're all just keeping the seat warm for when Puck can come back.
I'm shocked you let it get there, Vlad. I just thought that was a layup for you.
Man.
Colorado bullpen, Victor Vodnik versus Seth Halvorsen.
I'm going to go with Halvorsen. I know he's having like the worst spring ever. Well, I mean, Vodnik's pitched a couple innings and gave up four runs. So he's not doing all that well, but, Halvorsen's giving up what? Okay. Maybe he's not ready. But he in 2 2/3 innings, he's given up 20. He's faced 20 batters. He's given up 7 runs and 9 walks. And I think a lot of those were in one. He just couldn't get a guy out. And it was like his first outing, just, you know, walk after walk. I think the key here for me is like stay away.
Yeah. The bullpen report chart, I always leave as a note in Colorado, don't roster Rockies relievers. Just don't. But in this battle, I take Vodnik. You know, Warren Schaefer took over as the interim manager last season, and it was Vodnik who finished as the closer for the team and was very good. 8 saves over the last couple months, ERA under 2 somehow. That won't happen again, but I think Vodnik has the best chance of continuing in that role to start the season.
Well, the correct answer was neither, so we'll move on. Well, the hard thing with the Colorado bullpen, if you do ever roster it, the only time they get saves is at home. So it's counterintuitive because you want to start their pitchers on the road, but they only win at home. So it's very, very tough situation. So Dan is exactly correct. If you're in a situation where you're rostering Rockies closers, you are probably not in a good position in your league. So good luck. Next one, Washington's bullpen. I don't even know the first name of this guy. I should know that. Cole Henry versus Clayton Beter. Dan, you first.
Is death an option?
No.
I choose death.
I choose Michael Kopech.
I wish you would sign somewhere. Henry versus Beter. I honestly have no idea. This is approaching – I would already say it is in that Rockies bullpen territory. Just don't roster any of these guys. Just avoid them. Yeah, there's no spec worth taking here.
Yeah, I've been on the avoid train too. These guys are going to destroy you. There's a guy there who's decent in the minors, high swinging strike rate, lots of walk issues, but just like a sneaky guy to keep an eye on during the season if you even want to go there. But his name is Orlando Ribalta. So 28-year-old, he's 6'7", 245.
We're going deep here, kids. Going deep. Yes, I think that's a complete avoid, too. Next one, Vlad, you are up. Pick a closer on the A's that's going to lead the team and save. This is a Sacramento future Las Vegas Athletics for our buddy, Mr. Scott Ginstead.
All right. So I think Dan and I were kind of aligned, but I think we both kind of prefer Sterner or think he's the best guy there in the bullpen. So I'm just going to go throw a loop and say Mark Leiter Jr. I'm going to say Mark Leiter Jr. I think Hogan Harris is not going to close. I think he stinks. He's had like, you know, flashes of dominance, but remember, this is the guy who pulled the Halvorsen and had like, what was it, like 1/3 of an inning to open a season 2 years ago or 3 years ago, and had like 8 walks. It was like a 104 ERA or something just insane. Not that it has anything to do with, you know, the future, but still.
All right. Well, if you're just going to leave Sterner for me, I'm going to take him. It might be a little bit of a situation where that's what I want to happen over what I think will happen. There probably is a good chance that one of the veterans there, like Mark Leiter Jr., does at least start as the primary saves earner. But Justin Sterner is the most talented reliever in that bullpen. And if you're someone who believes that skills rise to the top, that's a situation where I think that should eventually happen.
Bonus question. How many saves did Justin Sterner have last year?
Zero.
I would guess zero since you're asking it.
That is correct.
Yes.
Moving on. We have two more. Who, Dan, we'll start with you. Who would you take behind Kinley, Will Vest or Kyle Finnegan?
Right now, I would go with Kyle Finnegan. His time with the Tigers last year after being acquired in trade, he was incredible. Like 22 strikeouts in 17 innings, he had a whip way under one. And he's got that experience as a closer. I had labeled him for years the world's okayest closer, just a guy who kept getting the job done, getting saves, even though he wasn't putting up elite ratios, didn't have amazing skills. But he showed some better skills in Detroit last year. And I think that earned him enough goodwill with AJ Hinch that he would have more opportunity than Will Vest, even though I think both will be used kind of as a backup for Kenley, who's not going to throw a lot of back-to-backs. He's not going to throw a lot of 3 out of 4 days. So Vest and Finnegan will pick up their saves, but I think Finnegan gets more.
Since I'm a never Finnegan guy and going to lose this competition to Dan anyways, I will say invest in Vest.
So since Applebee's is not our sponsor, Dan thinks Kyle Finnegan's is like Applebee's, where everything's decent. The world's most okay closer.
The world's okayest closer.
Last one, bonus question. Who is going to have more saves in Milwaukee, McGill or Uribe? Vlad, you're up.
Okay. I don't want to bet with health, but I just got to use the brain. I'm going to go with Trevor McGill.
Dan.
We're in agreement on this one. I don't think anything that Trevor McGill did last year, you know, the 30 saves, the real nice ratios, I don't think he deserves to lose the job. If he's healthy enough to pitch at the beginning of the year, I think he should be the closer. And Pat Murphy has already chosen him once. I think he'll choose him again. But Uribe will definitely be putting the pressure on, and McGill needs to stay healthy. So he has, you know, kind of a battle on two fronts there. But he, by starting with the job, he gets that head start on, you know, picking up the saves. So that's what I think will happen. McGill gets the most.
Awesome. That was fun, guys. Dan, I fully expect you to sweep all the answers since you are the bullpen guru. No pressure. But Vlad, I hope you wrote those down so we can revisit
them. Yes, yes, I did. I did. I will lose to Dan at the end of the season. Dan, dude, it's so great to have you on the show. Obviously, your solo pod on the FTN Network is awesome. And I don't know, I feel like we picked up a lot of information. I have a little bit more solidified a lot more things. And the way you break things down makes a lot of sense. So I'm, you know, very happy that you were on. Hopefully, one of these years you come and join us in Vegas. So thank you, Dan, so much for coming on.
Well, thanks for having me. And the regular bullpen report, you know, my 10 to 15 minute episodes, they'll be coming back in full force in a couple of weeks once the season starts. You know, I do the Tuesday episode, kind of recapping things, and then the Saturday episode, which is a look ahead towards the Fab for the weekend.
Awesome. Dan, that was fantastic. I really enjoyed it. Enjoy all the work you do for FTN. I know it's a must listen for me for, you know, going into Fab and kind of recapping the weekend. So keep up the great work, my friend. Enjoyed talking with you. And thank you.
Yep. Good to see you both again. Thanks, guys, for having me.
Thank you. Jason, night. I will see you in a few days.
Is that a threat?
It's coming. It's coming. Can't wait to hang out with you, buddy.
Cannot wait. So no pods before Vegas?
Yeah. Yeah. Making sure all the rankings, every cheat sheet, so everything's up to date, getting everything up together. And so we'll probably have like a main event wrap up when we come back. So we do have some live streams coming to you. Beat Lucas League. We got the MTM Ultimate on FTN Network. And also the Beat Joe Arrico will happen midweek. For Dan Thompson and Jason Anthony, I'm Vlad Sedler. This is the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast. We'll talk to you soon.